Well, we are coming into the home stretch with gift 6 of 7 from the motivational gifts of the Holy Spirit listed in Romans 12. We've already explored the gifts of perceiving or prophecy, serving or ministry, teaching, exhorting, and today, last week we did the gift of giving. We have stressed that we've each been blessed with a unique blend of gifts to benefit others and to fulfill God's purposes. We have considered the positive and also some of the negative aspects associated with each of these gifts. We've done that using information from a book by Don and Katie Fortune entitled Discovering Your God-Given Gifts. And we've considered how each gift might impact our passions, our perspectives, or our worldview, and also our relationships. And we've turned to the pages of Scripture for biblical examples of each gift. We'll continue with that same approach today as we consider the motivational gift of administration or leadership. We will consider both the characteristics and the inherent problems of gifted administrators, and about 13% of the population have this as their dominant spiritual gift. And then we will turn to the pages of Scripture and consider how those characteristics and problems played out in the life of Jacob's beloved and favorite son, Joseph. He's the one with that coat of many colors, if you're trying to figure out where we are in the biblical narrative with that particular gifted administrator. Those with administration as their dominant motivational gift are highly motivated to organize whatever falls within the scope of their responsibilities. Administrators love a challenge. They love to dig in and organize raw materials and also people and produce something totally new in the process. And they are generally a jack of all trades, but master of none. So if you need to set up or to restructure a ministry, a project, a product line, a committee, or a corporation, you probably want an administrator. Administrators are excellent communicators. They express ideas clearly. They organize in ways that communicate clearly. And they are true proponents of the idea that a picture is worth a thousand words. So they will probably present their ideas with lots of visual aids, including charts and diagrams and outlines and graphs. I once worked in a company where one of our administrators, who was responsible for our finances and our bottom line, loved to do graphs of all sorts, and he actually called an all-hands meeting where for an hour and a half he showed us graphs about why it was our overhead was too high and was making it difficult for us to compete. Meanwhile, those of us longing to get back to work could not help but notice that we were all charging overhead and raising those very numbers he was talking about while we sat there for an hour and a half. But he was in his glory with the graphs and the charts explaining it to all of us. Administrators love to present their ideas visually, and they may become upset when others cannot see their vision or their goals, and when others do not share their vision and their goals. That happens to be one of the problems of those with the gift of administration. Administrators prefer to be under authority in order to have authority. They work best that way, as explained by the Roman centurion who came to Jesus requesting healing for one of his servants. Jesus was all ready to go with him to his home and provide healing in person for this servant. But the centurion said, no, I'm not really worthy to have you come under my roof. And besides, I know that you don't need to. You see, I'm a man who is under authority, and I have others under my authority. And I say to one, go, and they go. I say to another, come, and they come. I tell them what I want done, and they go and do it. So I know, Lord, that you have authority, and you can say the word, and my servant will be healed. And Jesus was amazed at his faith, and Jesus does, in fact, say the word, and the servant is healed immediately, even though Jesus is not in the same place as that servant. Administrators like to have the limits of their authority clearly defined. And once they know those limits, they will happily and effectively work as their own bosses within those limits. And they will do so creatively, and they will do so productively. But in the absence of clearly defined limits of authority, administrators will feel stifled, and they will feel inhibited. And shared or team leadership is often challenging for them, one of the problems that comes along with this gift. Remember, administrators like to be their own bosses within their given area of authority. So you suddenly bring team leadership into play, and those lines get kind of gray and blurry, and that person with that gift of administration is feeling a little uncomfortable in the process. So they would rather just be the leader instead of being part of a team of leaders. Administrators won't take responsibility unless it is delegated to them by those in authority. We will see that time and time again when we look at Joseph's story as it unfolds in the latter chapters of the book of Genesis. Administrators will not take responsibility unless it is delegated to them by those in authority. However, when no specific leadership exists, an administrator will take initiative and they will assume responsibilities. Administrators especially enjoy working on long-range goals and projects. Servers, you may remember, like short-term goals. Do one little thing. Okay, now give me the next thing. I'll finish that. Now give me the next thing. We said if you have a child with the gift of service, do not leave for work in the morning and give them a list of 10 things to complete. They won't know what to do. They won't do any of it. Have them complete something and then call you, then give them the next thing, and you'll probably get those 10 things accomplished over the course of the time allotted. So administrators, unlike servers, like long-range goals and projects. Those with the gift of compassion, they don't want goals at all. They see no need for goals. Just go out and take care of everybody and love them. Servers want short-term, but administrators thrive on multi-year projects. They can see the big picture. They can see the finished product in their mind's eye, and they will calmly and methodically handle whatever delays or whatever challenges unfold along the way. Administrators easily facilitate both resources and people. They do that in order to accomplish tasks and goals. They are skilled delegators, so not me. They enjoy working with and being around people. But that brings us to one of the problems, one of the challenges for them until they mature spiritually. They have a tendency to use people because they want to get those goals accomplished. However, administrators are willing to let others get the credit in order to get the job done. And I actually worked for a supervisor and project manager for many years who was always giving us the credit when his projects went well. He told us, he said, you all make me look good, and I want you to get the credit as well as the credit that he was getting. That's an administrator. Administrators will endure criticism in order to accomplish the ultimate task or goal. But because of that ability, administrators tend to build up outer calluses to all criticism, and that ripples into their personal lives off of the job, and sometimes they even don't respond back to their families the way they should. They built up these calluses. Somebody says something that hurts them, and they just keep it all inside. Another problem or challenge for those with this gift. Administrators also bring great zeal and great enthusiasm to whatever task they are involved in. Romans 6:8, as you heard read this morning, says that those with this gift are to lead with diligence. Another way to translate that, the way the Amplified Bible translates it, is they are to lead with zeal and singleness of mind. The Greek could also imply speed, dispatch, earnestness, intense effort, and determination. So it is no surprise that gifted administrators want things completed as quickly as possible. The zeal of mature, gifted administrators is pure. It is altruistic. However, they can come across kind of strong with that zeal. People are like, whoa, I feel like I've been rolled over by a steamroller. Or which way did that bus go that just ran me over? People can feel that way in the presence of a gifted administrator. Not because they mean harm, but because their motives are pure and because they want to get things done as quickly as possible. Administrators find great fulfillment and great joy in working to accomplish goals. As a result, they can overdrive themselves and neglect both personal and family needs in the process. So they find great fulfillment and joy in working to accomplish goals, but they hate routine tasks. The administrator is probably not going to want to sit and file all day long. They will go crazy. And that leaves us with that problem then. They tend to neglect routine tasks at home. Pity the spouse or the partner of an administrator. There are things at home that may never get done. The honey-do list may be very, very long. The bills may be piling up for that paperwork that should have been done. It's just because they're focused on their long-range goals at work, and all this other stuff seems unimportant to them. It's just who they are. And they prefer to move on to a new challenge once something is accomplished. They often are brought into an organization to take care of a particular need, to get that organization to the next level. And once they're there, it's like, okay, someone else must need me now. Administrators are list makers who constantly write notes to themselves. They are natural and capable leaders who know how to delegate. And they know when to keep old methods going and when to introduce new methods. So that now brings us to our biblical example. It brings us to the story of Joseph, a very long story found in Genesis 37 and then going on to chapters 39 through 50. So we're going to have the Clip Notes version this morning, and we are going to keep it brief. But we first see this gift at work in the life of Joseph when he is just a teenager. He has this vision from God, this big picture, and in it, it's clear that he sees a hierarchy there. He's going to be at the head. Others are going to bow down to him. Now, he's a little immature as a teenager. He's dumb enough to tell everybody his dream. Doesn't make him real popular. But the fact that he has this dream suggests that in addition to being an administrator, maybe as a secondary gift, he is also a perceiver because he's also a tattletale. And, you know, right is right, wrong is wrong. He's always tattling on his brothers. But that's what we see of Joseph as a teenager. He already understands there's a hierarchy. He somehow has this insight from God that he's going to be at the top of the hierarchy, everyone else beneath him. Joseph then moves on to irritate his brothers to the point where they've had enough of him tattling to Dad about what they're doing wrong or what he thinks they are doing wrong. They are tired of him being Dad's favorite and being spoiled and not having to do all of the work that they have to do. They see him coming from a distance one day. They decide they're going to gang up on him and ambush him. They do that. They put him in a pit. They're thinking they'll leave him there to die or they'll kill him. One of the brothers intercedes, probably one with a gift of compassion, plans to come back later and get him out. But meanwhile, there is a caravan coming, a caravan of Midianite traders, and they decide, why should we kill our brother and have his blood on our hands? We'll sell him to these slave traders. So they do that. Joseph then winds up in Egypt. He is bought as a slave by Potiphar, who is the captain of the guard for the Pharaoh of Egypt, a very powerful man. Joseph, I guess, could be complaining and get himself killed, but he seems to accept the fact he is at least temporarily under Potiphar's authority. He does what he's told. He does it well. Potiphar realizes that Joseph's God is with him. He gives Joseph more and more responsibility. Ultimately, Joseph becomes the administrator of Potiphar's entire household. That means he's responsible for all of the finances, for all of the day-to-day operations of that household, for all of the other slaves and servants. He's a great administrator. He's doing an amazing job. Potiphar just knows that with Joseph in charge, everything works the way it should. It's just wonderful. But then there is Potiphar's wife. And she's left at home a lot without her husband. And she sees this young Hebrew servant, slave, and it's like, I want him. She begs him to come and lie with her. He will not do it. He said, again, under authority, right? He doesn't assume it. He waits for it to be given. My master has given me authority of everything in his household except you. I cannot do what is wrong and go against God and go against my master and lie with you and have pleasure with you. Sorry, I can't do it. Unfortunately, Potiphar's wife does not want to take no for an answer. One day he's in the house. She grabs his coat. He runs away. She goes and tells all the other servants in the household, look what this Hebrew slave did. She lies. She really does. But her husband has no choice but to take action or he's going to lose all discipline in the household. And so he places Joseph in the prison where Pharaoh's prisoners are kept. Now, if he believed that Joseph really did this, I am sure Joseph would have been put to death. I think Potiphar knows better, but what's he going to do? So now here is poor Joseph in prison because he did the right thing and not the wrong thing. But once again, he's under authority. He does what he's told. He does it well, and he is given more and more authority until he is put in charge of all the prisoners in this prison. Doesn't seize authority, waits for it to be given to him. He's a true administrator. And in the process of caring for the prisoners, he hears some of their dreams. He interprets what it means. He asks the one who he is able to tell will soon be back in Pharaoh's service to please let Pharaoh know about him. Of course, that person initially forgets. But then Pharaoh has a very disturbing dream, a strange dream about fat cows and skinny cows, a second dream related to it. No one who works for Pharaoh can explain it. None of his wise men in his court, no one knows what to tell him. And so the other servant who was once in prison says to him, there is this Hebrew slave in prison, and he knows how to interpret dreams. So Pharaoh sends for Joseph. He shares the dream with Joseph. Joseph explains what it means. He explains that there are going to be 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine. It's going to be in the land of Egypt and all the surrounding nations. And Pharaoh says, well, what do we do? And Joseph outlines a very detailed plan about how they're to store up as much as they can during these years of plenty so that they then have storehouses full of grain when the years of famine come. And he says, Pharaoh, you need to find a man who knows how to administer all this and make it work. He doesn't say it's me, but Pharaoh recognizes that it is. And so Joseph is put in charge of the project. He is given Pharaoh's signet ring, which means he has authority to sign anything as if he was the king of Egypt. He is second in command. He builds the warehouses. He gets everything stored up. They are all ready so that when that famine comes, there is plenty of food in Egypt. There's food for the Egyptians. There is also food for those from foreign countries who come to purchase food. It builds up Egypt's treasury as a result. But he is an outstanding administrator working under the authority given to him and recognizing that ultimately his abilities come to him from God. And eventually his own family comes to Egypt. God has used him to keep the covenant community, the covenant family alive during these difficult 7 years of famine. And they are, of course, fearful, his brothers, now that they know he is alive. But Joseph says, you may have meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. And he is able to forgive them and provide for them and their families as well. That's a gifted administrator. He's got the big picture. He knows what needs to be done. He knows how to delegate to get it done. He knows how to handle it all. And God uses this gifted administrator to save the covenant community through which the Messiah will eventually be born. So to finish up, those with the gift of administration as their dominant motivational gift work under authority, and they have no problem with the unpopular word accountability. They organize whatever areas of authority have been delegated to them, and they do so with vision, and they find great joy in accomplishing long-range projects and goals. They understand, in the words of the old Charles Wesley hymn, that we all have a God-given charge to keep. We are all accountable to God. And they help all of us to respond to that great calling through their God-given organizational abilities. So our hymn of response is 413, A Charge to Keep I Have, A God to Glorify.